And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 233.
233.
I am Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Rund.
And this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Today we have a guest. A wonderful friend of mine and a comedian. She's been on the Real Nerds of Comedy at Comic-Con twice, and she has her own show, not like a comedy show that she has coming out at, it's going to be at Laughs coming up in a couple weeks, Laughs Comedy Club in Seattle. Her name's Maria Elizabeth. Maria Elizabeth, she's our guest, and she came on here and taught Samantha a lot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, things I'd never heard of before, you know? Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. It certainly was interesting. She's like fascinating.
Oh,
I had three questions for her. She's like super interesting.
Extremely nerdy. Also has this Hotties and Bodies. It's sort of a risque comedy show, I would call it. Risque. Mm-hmm. A mix of burlesque and comedy and pole dancing, I guess. And it's sold out the last time they were at Laughs Comedy Club, and it's I think it's going to do well.
Sell out again.
I think so.
I would expect, yeah.
And she's really funny and fun and interesting. Mm-hmm. One of the most interesting people I think I've met in Seattle. You're going to learn a lot, I think, from her about different communities that we might be considered alternative by some folks. But
I feel like in Seattle, it's probably more. I don't know what the split is, but it seems like it'd be more typical in Seattle, certainly than compared to like other areas.
Yeah. We're not in Kansas anymore, Samantha.
I was in Kansas like once, maybe more than once, but once I remember.
But not anymore.
No, that's true. Not now. We're in the, but we are in the Emerald City. So.
Oh, that is funny. Actually, yeah. I never really connected that. I've never used the Kansas line before and then Emerald City.
Yeah.
You saw Wicked. Did you see Wicked?
I can't wait to see it. No, because I haven't been able to go to the theater, and I haven't gone to the, you know, to Broadway to see it.
Right.
But it's going to be coming out for streaming on the 21st, and I will be watching.
Oh, it's not yet? I thought it not was yet. Already.
Well, maybe if I was going to purchase it, but
yeah,
I was just waiting to get it as part of the subscription.
So that's tomorrow from when we're recording.
Tomorrow is the 21st. Thanks, Silas. I was going to put it on my calendar and I forgot. And now I have something else to look forward to coming up.
That is exciting.
I'm excited. Thank you.
Gretchen will get to watch it.
She might be excited
about that.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, that's what we're here to tell you is make sure to check out Wicked streaming now. On your favorite streaming device. I don't know which one yet. I'll go look to see where it's airing. I can't remember off the top of my head.
There's a few different.
Is it the Peacock or the Hulu or the HBO? There's so many.
Oh, you know what it is? I need new contacts. I've been wiping my face like so much during this episode. For anybody who's actually watching it, I'm not crying. My eyes are just watering. Sound like a man saying that. But I think I need new contacts. That's probably what it is. Anyhow.
You're supposed to change them.
I know, but long story. Anyway.
Okay. I was trying to make a joke that you've never changed your contacts. But
oh, no, I totally do. I'm not one of I can take a nap for maybe an hour, but I'm not one of the people who sleeps in their contacts. That totally freaks me out, even though technically I can sleep in these, but no. No. Anyway, we don't really talk about that on the
show. No, we don't. But that's the thing. We've told you what we talk about. It's an interview with Marie Elizabeth.
I just go on tangents because you're so fun to talk to.
You know what? I hear that from a lot of people. If Silas, he's so fun to talk to.
Yeah. You know.
And it was fun to talk to Marie Elizabeth, and she answers the world famous 7 questions at the end of the episode. So
yeah,
it's great. So everybody. Sit back, relax, open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 233, Marie Elizabeth.
I mean, that's a work area. It looks great.
Marie, I love the mic up there. I think that's great. You look like a professional.
Oh.
Like that's I
now, like to pretend now that I'm a professional.
I'm kind of jealous. Now I want a mic in the top corner where it's not. Yeah. So I'm gonna steal this idea. You're changing the show.
I love that. I love that I can be such an influence.
So Samantha, this is Marie Elizabeth, who you haven't met yet, and I'm very excited to bring you these two worlds together.
Yes.
My black and a half and my real nerds in one room. Marie is one of my favorite, I'm gonna say new comic, but you're not new, like you're like 3 years, right?
Yeah, like yeah. 3 years.
But she's been on two of my real nerd shows. Two, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just been a year since I've known you.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love Marie Elizabeth so much. She's one of the few people.
This is so good because I love Silas.
Yeah. I was like, when I did that Geek Fest thing, Samantha? It was in Everett and it was going to be like my headline. I got the headline.
I think so.
Like Marie was one of the people I messaged them. When I said, you got to get Marie Elizabeth. Marie Elizabeth. I'm going to, I was like, please get her on. And got her on the show. They should have had her on my show because she rocks. Marie actually does nerdy material. Like she follows the assignment. Which people I've talked about before. I don't know if I've talked about to you, Samantha, but like I do this Real Nerds a Comedy show and yeah. I have people who are nerds. I do this at Comic-Con for people that don't know about it. People who are nerds for years that I've known them and I just haven't had them do the show because they never do nerdy material and I don't really think about it, right?
You never let me be on the show. You said I wasn't nerdy enough.
Well, one, you're not. Okay, we'll get to that. But then I'm like, fine. Okay, you're going to do nerdy stuff? And they're like, yeah. And then they do like one joke. Or they say, I'm so happy to be here. Da-da. And then they do 5 minutes of pot material. Or like just their normal bar set. And I'm like, well, why were you upset about not doing this if you're not going to actually do it? Like you're not doing the show. This is a nerdy show. Every joke can be nerdy. It's not that's why the audience is there, to hear you talk about Stargate and Star Wars and Star Trek and anime or whatever. They want to hear you talk about this, and that drives me bonkers that people come and they don't do that. And so then Marie came and she's did solid nerd set.
Solid nerd, no crumbs left.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Marie, what got you into comedy? What was the draw? I guess I haven't seen you do a non-nerd set yet.
Well, you know, that's okay because I also do some nerd jokes like in bars, and then people say like, maybe you would get booked more if you were less nerdy. But what got me into comedy was just like not having a great home life and seeing like Robin Williams and other people that just had so much energy and so much delight on stage, and just feeling like I wasn't alone in that. And so then I just like got really into just consuming stand up and all sorts of forms of comedy.
So that was like a childhood thing?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Robin Williams. So what made you at 3 years ago finally go?
I'd always wanted to do stand up, and I had gone after high school. I went to film school and I wanted to tell stories that way. And I became disenchanted because it was during the Harvey Weinstein era. Oh. And then I went back to regular school, got a bachelor's and a graduate degree, had kids. And I kind of felt like maybe I'd missed my chance. And then a friend of mine reached out and wanted to hang out and said, oh, I'm going to do this mic first and we can meet after. And I was like, I'll go and support you. And then being there at the mic, I was like, oh, no, wait, I can do this. So the first one was just like the kind where it's more improvisational, which was pretty easy for me. I've done a lot of like nerdy improv theater as a kid, like up through high school. And then the second time was people had like prepared sets, but I saw them writing them out like at the bar table. And I was like, I can do at least this, at least immediately. And then I went up and I did 5 minutes and it was just so joyful. And I've been really.
Where was it? What was your location of your first open
mic? It was the Water Wheel.
Oh, okay. I've never been there for comedy. Here. I ended up there one night and that's all I'm going to say. It's that kind of bar, Samantha. It's that. The dive bar in Ballard.
I guess that ended up there one night. I was very how did you just
nobody starts off
into this?
Not one person has ever started off at the Water Wheel if they're out for a night. You end up there.
I will say that there was a lot of people consuming a lot of different kinds of substances and then making out on the patio.
Oh.
And I was like,
oh.
Do people know what they're doing? Do I need to be the like kissing monitor?
That just reminded me of somebody that we know. Actually, you might also know them too, Marie. And wait, yeah, was at your show, Silas. We don't have to say their name on here and embarrass them. But it was actually at a show that I was featuring for you that you were producing.
We will talk about this off air. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not going to say who it was. But they were blatantly making out.
Oh my god,
during my set.
I have
probably longer and it was not a big area, like the it was a small bar room, not a big area, and they were just like totally making out. And it's
funny to see grown adults just making out in a bar, because you're like, what
I mean, and were they drunk? I don't know if they were drunk or not.
I don't think so. I don't think they were either. They were just making out, and not just
totally like,
not like just, you know, a little flirting and a little peck here and there. Like you're like, oh, how cute. It was a make out. Like they were on a couch, kind of like, what's going on?
That was wild. I hadn't remembered that story.
Me neither.
It was weird enough that we both remembered it, and it was like years ago.
Once you brought it up, I remember, because it's the only time that's ever happened to me.
Right? Yeah, I think it was the only time. Same.
I performed comedy at a swing club once.
Swing dancing?
No.
a swingers club.
And they did not make out during my set.
That's just wild.
It was more inappropriate.
Were you a little disappointed?
No, I was.
How dare you throw the keys down?
Oh my gosh. No, I was relieved. That was the first time I ever performed for a sober audience. Like I knew it was completely sober. And that was weird. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
That was strange. Well, it was more the watching the people go by with on a leash, just walking by. And I was like, oh, I learned a new thing. I mean, I had seen that before on HBO Real Sex. I used to watch that when I was.
So I was imagining this is like a swingers party with like sort of like vanilla people that just swap. But this sounds like more like a kink party.
No, it was one of those clubs, like the swing club, not at a house. I wouldn't have gone to a house. I don't know. If you invite me to a house, I feel like I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen
here. You leave your underpants at the door.
Yeah.
That's what it would. Gosh, I just have so many jokes.
That you said like, just a vanilla couple swap. Because that's already like Rocky Road to me. Like that's what like.
But Seattle is known, right? Like this area, this neck of the woods is known to be a very like risque area, right?
Like, from Portland, and that's like Seattle's Amsterdam.
Portland is Amsterdam?
Yeah.
So that's looser than Seattle?
Oh, I mean, like it's way more sex positive. I could talk for so long on sex positive culture in Portland versus Seattle.
You'd have a show as well that you produce.
Yes.
That you've produced at Laughs Comedy Club, and you'll have another one coming up when? A couple weeks, right? A few weeks?
It's going to be April 17th.
Hotties and Bodies. Samantha should do your show.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. Is it at 2 p.m?
It is. This one on the 17th is going to be 8 p.m. And then we've got another one July 5th. And we're having an early show and a late show, like 7 p.m. and 10 p.m.
So tell her about the show. I don't
know when I'm ever going to be able to do comedy again.
Tell her about the show. Tell us about the show. What is the theme of the show?
So it's kind of like harkening back to old fashioned comedy. You know, when we were in vaudeville and it had burlesque and comedians. So it's burlesque and comedy and pole dancing. And people do take off their clothes.
Yeah, I think Silas is making fun of me. I would be completely uncomfortable. Pole dancing as an athletic event, I would totally be like, get me one of those. But I will sound like the most buttoned up, sort of like, you can't have lived in Seattle for this long kind of person. I'm like, hey, people, you do you. Like, as long as it's hurting anybody else and everybody's, you know, like, as long as nobody's hurting anybody else, cool. But
so do you, does it go, but is there like a comedian and then burlesque, or is the comedian doing burlesque?
Okay, well, it alternates. So a dancer and then a comedian.
Okay.
But sometimes the comedians will say, can I please strip? So this next show, we're going to have like 4 comedians doing sets. And then 3 of them are also going to do burlesque. And then another comedian is just going to do burlesque, has been working on like funny burlesque.
I thought that they were like stripping while doing their jokes. And I was like, how's anybody going to hear their punchlines?
Oh, yeah. No. You tell your jokes and then you have a cue for your music and then you take off your clothes. If you want to, it's not a requirement.
There is a show in Portland that they do strip while they.
There's a lot of stripping in Portland. I will say that. Portland, yeah, my hometown, more strip clubs per capita than anywhere else in the United States. Full nudity in bars.
Because you told me earlier that there's a rule in Washington. What did you say about the no nudity?
You can't have any nudity around alcohol. So you got to cover up your buttons and holes.
Buttons and holes. I like that.
I heard that terminology from...
So people can't go anywhere if they have a crop top on?
You mean like a belly button hole?
Yeah. Who said button?
It's not I Dream of Jeannie laws.
Not that kind of button.
It's just nipples and genitalia.
Oh, okay. Because I was like a button. The only body button I've known of is like a belly button.
No, nipples.
Okay.
My kids, I call them belly holes. I say belly
holes.
Oh,
you do? That creeps me out, man. My daughter, she'll pick up my shirt and see my belly button. She'll go, hole, mommy, hole. And I'm just like, no, it's a belly button. It looks like a hole, but it's a belly button. And I'm like, it doesn't look like a button, though. So that is pretty confusing.
I think
it doesn't actually look like a hole. You can't see like all the way through it. But I mean, for a kid, probably. And Silas looks like a belly hole.
Well, I would say that something fell in their belly hole. And so I had to go get it out. And so I tickle them.
So, Yeah.
Everything I do with my kids is based around some joke of some sort. And I made up a joke for it. I
fully support that.
Yeah.
That's good parenting.
Now, Samantha, this show, this Hotties and Bodies show, sold out.
Actually, I was going to say, I could see it selling out. Like, I could see it selling like hotcakes or that. I don't know why I said that weird. I just feel like I should be in a podcast about the 1800s right now and let you guys podcast. And it would be much more like delightful podcast than me being like, put on your clothes. What?
This is from the 1800s.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean like the other 1800s that I've just where I like just drink my tea in a perfectly buttoned up shirt.
She's in Victorian.
Yeah.
It's sold out. I did a show a couple times with a burlesque group. We called it carnal comedy. We did it at the Rendezvous for a couple shows and they sold out. They did like 2 shows a night and I got 3 comics and they would come perform and then there would be a strip or a burlesque to burlesque. It's a verb too, is it? Burlesque
dancing.
It's a verb and a noun. Yeah, so we alternated, and I learned a lot about how to do comedy with that, and people love it. Like, audiences loved it.
Yeah.
I'm just, you know, at one point,
like, just in Vegas, like, I mean, I don't know, maybe there was, and it just wasn't advertised to me for some odd reason.
There's so burlesque in Vegas.
Carousel in Vegas. But no, I haven't. I mean, I've been to Vegas a few times, but I don't remember ever hearing of a show like the one that you're producing that's selling out here. Do you know where it's like the mix of comedy and burlesque and.
I wonder if it's not as overt about what it is, because I think the burlesque shows have like hosts who are funny.
Well, I've definitely heard of burlesque shows, actually been to a couple burlesque shows, but which might be surprising from the conversation earlier, but like performing in one, I think would be like frightening, but probably very empowering for people. Right. But frightening for me, but no, just like the combination. I don't remember there actually being like a comedian there. Maybe it's been a few years. Maybe
Marie,
there was.
You might have to hit Vegas.
Yeah.
I would love to do that. And in Vegas, like, can't you have like a family show where people are also topless? Like, aren't the rules just really different in Vegas?
Well, I don't know if you can be topless in those shows.
Unless you're for a guy, but.
Yeah. I don't really know. I haven't looked into that.
I don't know.
So your comedy there, is it nerdy there, or is it like, is it sexual in nature?
It's very sex positive, but also very nerdy. I think that there's just like this like incredible Venn diagram of just neurodivergent, kinky, sex positive people. Because when I told some of my nerd jokes there, just the setup, they were howling. And that was so affirming. Just like, I found my people. And I promote the show on FetLife. So a lot of people from FetLife are there.
Do you want to explain to those of us that don't know what FetLife is?
Yeah, FetLife. I think of it like Facebook, but for pervs. Like, instead of like a profile photo that's my face, it's my boobs. And okay. And you can just like promote like events on there. You can do personal ads and stuff, but mostly I'm just like, come to my show. And then because it's the Seattle area, I had last show, I had like 100 plus people that RSVP'd maybe, and like 40 that RSVP'd yes. And I just like put a post out there that was like, literally, you guys are the worst. What do I have to do to get you to confirm and just say that you'll come to my show? You already have my nudes. What else do you want from me? And then they RSVP'd yes. So I think that that's a big reason that I got it sold out.
Well, that's great.
So you had your nudes out?
I already had them out. They've been
because how you sold them. Like,
yeah, I was just like, what else do you want from me? You already have the nudes.
Yeah.
Are you like not? I'm sorry. I'm like, why am I saying this on here? But there's got to be a listener out there that's wondering the same thing I am. So I'm just going to. Or you like, you're not afraid of being attacked. Like, it's amazing that you're not like afraid. Like, I would be afraid of being attacked. Like, I don't like sharing
physically attacked.
Yeah. I mean, because if you have like, you know, it's your body on a site that's like Facebook. Like, I'm just thinking what you said. It's like Facebook, but for pervs. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm not like bumming you out with my questions.
No.
Okay. Because like for Facebook, I'm already a little bit like try to be careful about what I put on it. Right. Because you never know like who else is on Facebook or whatever. But if it's like Facebook, but for pervs, it just seems like it would require an additional level of like security for people to not like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I think that there's a lot of things happening for me all at the same time that might not be your jam for like the level that I feel like I'm out there and authentic. Like, mm-hmm. I'm also a parent. I'm a social worker. I run a practice for mental health. Like, there's all of these other things. And I put it out there. I think that like being in like the kink community, there's so much work on consent and being really thoughtful and being really respectful that I've never had a problem. I have a bigger problem when I've put out ads on like meta platforms like Instagram and Facebook of people saying really horrible things or like saying that they were gonna find out where I lived. And
Oh, geez. God.
But I haven't had that with FetLife.
So how do you feel secure? Like, because if you are putting literal nudes out,
yeah,
like you're not afraid of those being used against you in any way, because
I was actually going to
the community because of the community that they're there.
I don't have any of nudity with my face.
Okay.
So it's either like just sort of like body shots or a face shot that I have like in those platforms.
But is it like your actual name?
No.
Because
I was not hard to figure out because you look at what I'm promoting, like you're seeing the show that I promote and you know that what that username is. And then you see me and I'm hosting and saying that I'm
right.
It's not hard to figure out who I am.
I was also thinking, oh, could you be like, how would it impact your job? Or, you know, just like some of those other things too. What is going on? Sorry. My computer's getting this weird like message. So sorry.
I find it interesting that it seems that there is more in these communities where you're more vulnerable. Like, I mean, I think like emotionally, I don't know. It sounds vulnerable to me. It sounds intimate to me that there is more almost seeming of safety within that than. Yeah. Like I'm surprised that there aren't more creeps hiding in that area, like that are not going in there with ill intent, like to just disrupt it like they do on Facebook. Like, I don't get why. Do they just not think of it? Are they?
Yeah. Like, and also, if you creeps are listening to this, you shouldn't.
Don't do that. Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah, I think because so many people in the kink community are neurodivergent, I think that it honestly doesn't occur to them necessarily.
To be creepy or?
To push people's boundaries intentionally.
No, but I'm surprised that people don't like.
You mean like.
Why don't they just go into it?
In there and try to. Yeah, I mean, that always happens. There's always. But I think that people try really hard to keep each other safe and have. Pretty strict boundaries around that. But like, even, you know, at the Real Nerds of Comedy at Emerald City Comic Con, I had like a flippant thing that I said about like, find me on FetLife. And then I had people come up after the show and say, can I actually find you on FetLife? And then talk to me about like queer, kinky, like sort of like Star Trek stuff that was sort of like in this Venn diagram. It is really, I think it's almost the same population.
That makes more sense to me than the Republican nerds, honestly.
Sorry for the weird. I don't know what is going on with my computer right now. Sorry for the weird faces. You're probably getting so many weird facial reactions. Just don't get what's going on.
Like I said on the show how I don't understand conservative nerds and Republican nerds. Like that, it boggles my mind. So it actually doesn't. I think the nerd community tends to be more open-minded, you know, at least having read about things that are like not, I don't know. Okay, wait, if there's neurotypical, feels like there must be a term for like non-FET type people. Is that neuro?
Vanilla?
Vanilla? Is there a kinder word?
Does that not feel kind?
It doesn't feel. Well, my wife does. When I say vanilla, I think sometimes she does take that as a little like, hey, even though she's like, well,
People normally say it in a way where it's like rude. You know what I mean? I feel like people normally use it like an insult. Like, oh, you're just vanilla. You're just so vanilla. Vanilla. You're like, oh.
Nobody ever goes, you're so vanilla. Like you're with enthusiasm, even though vanilla is a solid taste.
It's classic.
It is classic. I think when you point out being
French vanilla,
like a non-kink Would non-kink feel like a better sort of way of describing
that?
Well,
I'm just thinking, neurodivergent also sounds like a little, it's almost a little mean sounding. I just feel like it should be, I'm trying to invent a word. I guess I want to invent two words.
Okay.
Like, well, I guess I always think of mainstream sexuality or something, and then non-mainstream. I don't know.
Okay,
I'm going to work on this.
I want to just pause on sort of like the neurodivergent element of it. So neurodivergent humans, because this is actually like my day job specialty, is just neurodivergent humans and mental health and stuff. Mm-hmm. We generally, and there's no research that I've read on this. This is just my experience and talking to a gazillion different neurodivergent people, but they tend to fall into like more of like an asexual spectrum or like a hypersexual spectrum. And wherever they fall in those two spectrums, that doesn't mean that they're not involved in kink, even if they're asexual, because a lot of kink isn't necessarily sexual. It's just different. So there's a lot of things that are like sensory wise, really pleasurable or regulating to somebody that's neurodivergent, like just like somebody lying down on me, or maybe like a thuddy, like flogging. Might be like
a flogging. Really
flogging,
like boarding school.
Like,
is that not beating?
Like, it's like a leather.
Oh, that, oh, I had the right word.
Leather. Okay. I was thinking of like the paddle from those old school boarding school movies. Like, you didn't.
Is it okay if I info dump for a second about sensory integration?
Yeah,
it's interesting.
Okay. Okay, so did you know that there's 8 senses? So there's 5 that like everybody knows about.
Okay.
That you learned about in elementary school. And then there's one that's called interoception, and it is your connection to your body. And so a lot of times when we are taught as neurodivergents to not respond to itchy sweaters or whatever it is, we like turn our interoception down. So it makes it difficult for us to know what our emotions are, if we have to go to the bathroom, if we're hungry, like all of these things. It's just difficult for us to connect with our body and understand what's happening. And then there is vestibular, which is the thing in your inner ear that tells you when you're in motion. So people that like that really like moving through space of skateboarding or swinging or spinning. And then there's proprioceptive, and proprioceptive is in your muscles and connective tissue. And that can be sort of being in small spaces, getting squeezed, heavy, like weightlifting, like a weighted blanket. So a lot of times like neurodivergent people will go into kink spaces because they can just say, can somebody lie on me? Can somebody put me in this tiny box? Can like somebody like do this specific sensory input? And then there's always somebody that'll do it, and it doesn't necessarily need to be with the idea of achieving orgasm.
So kink is not sexual.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was just going to ask that, because I was like, that since that's like for a specific sensory need, that's not a sexual need. Yeah. I'm surprised to hear that that would be
all of that can be in the kink umbrella. Sort of the need to have a specific thing so that you can have an orgasm. That's more of like what a fetish is. But kink is a really big umbrella that's just, do you want me to take this spiky thing and roll it on your body? That's kink.
Because like, couldn't somebody who wants to get a deep tissue massage, if that wasn't that so common, if it wasn't common, then somebody would call that a kink, right?
Yeah. But I mean, like you could totally go into a kink space and ask somebody to just like really dig into your muscles, and there'd probably be somebody that'd be into that. If you just think about it as sensory input, I think it like demystifies a lot of what happens in kink spaces.
Do you think that some people have like a kink that they want, but don't understand that it doesn't have to be sexual?
Yeah. Well, I think it's because we just are such a puritanical society that it just becomes difficult to even like think of asking about something.
That, because I was just thinking about like kinks that I've heard that I'm like the baby things, like being in the fetal, where they don't even end up, sex isn't actually involved in it. or maybe it does become later, but like, I was like, oh, maybe they just needed that one thing, but then it's assumed that they have to keep doing something more, or it seems extra. Like, people will accept you to do things if they think it's your sexual kink. Then they're like, well, that's cool. Okay. That's just their thing. But if it's just something they need, it's like, well, that's a little bizarre. Like, what do you mean you just need that? Like, no. If it's not going to result in that sexual part, it seems odd to them, I think.
I think that we like really get into sort of like structures that feel more like binary. And so the idea of like, you know, like, just as an example, if somebody like really loves soft touch, of like, oh, I'd really love it if I was lying down and I had all of my friends, while I'm naked, rub feathers on my body. Okay. That would feel both like really loving to me from like people just like taking care of me, but also that would feel really great of just the sensory. That doesn't mean that it needs to turn into like an orgasm. Like, that would still be.
Like, my whole body tickled when you did that. Like, that sounds like a.
I mean, it sounds horrifying,
sounds like
to
a
me.
Torture. That's not my jam. Like, oh, a little tickles. Ah.
I mean, that'd be amazing to have that many friends all like fly in from around the world to just come see you, but naked? Oh, I don't know. But
she didn't say naked. She said,
I did say naked.
She did say
did
naked.
You?
Oh, yeah. Just as an example of like what it is to just have your full skin out and have this like caring activity that doesn't necessarily have to be sexual.
Wait, but they're naked.
But
so
there's lots of people that are naked and they don't have sex.
Yeah.
We're not
yeah.
talking about married people. We're talking about just other.
Well, that's
what happens when you go to the Korean spot?
Oh my gosh. So
I've never been allowed back. I mean,
oh my gosh.
Wait, Korean spas?
I'm like caught up on the semantics of this too. Like, I feel like I need to look it up, like, because just. You did explain the difference between a kink and a fetish is the fetish, it's more sexualized, but a kink, I'm still like, wait, so why is, I don't understand why certain things are called kinks. I still don't understand that.
Well,
and I'm curious about that because I feel like there's so many things that would be kinks if they weren't just, I don't know. Kink
my,
is what?
My guess
to your senses.
Marie, I have a guess. It's that because of our puritanical society that we've turned the word kink to mean something naughty when it wasn't originally intended to mean that.
Yeah, like, what does it mean?
Right? Is
yeah,
that right?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't
and
know.
And I'm part of the community and I don't know. I'm definitely not the authority on that.
You should write a book on this. You're a clinical person. You should. This could be your jam.
It would be really fun. Have you ever read Victorian erotica?
Have you seen my library? No, I haven't.
Your library of all of the Victorian erotica.
Yeah.
It's just another time when there was like a really puritanical society. And then what they wrote for erotica would definitely all be basically considered kink now. And I just find it really interesting of what happens when you sort of like repress people. What are the things that they're interested in?
Sorry, I did not hear that. I'm going to have to listen to the episode so that I can hear it because I was looking up kink because it was really bothering me.
Did you find a definition of kink?
I actually found a couple. One, I forgot, like, hello, my hair. Short. Well, it's a little like out now. But I was like, right, duh, hair. But a clever or unusual way of doing something. Cramp in some part of the body. Imperfection likely to cause difficulties in the operation of something, or unconventional sexual taste or behavior. So I'm like, oh, no wonder why it seems like there's some confusion for number three and number six. To me, I think like number six, the unconventional sexual taste or behavior, that was completely what I was thinking before our conversation. And then when you're saying sometimes a kink, it's not sexual. It's just that other, you know, another way somebody might have a sensory need that's being met. And I think that speaks to number three of the clever or unusual way of doing it. Like, they want to feel like soft caresses, but not be sexual. So it's like, oh, let's get all the friends in the room and use feathers or something. I don't know. That's just what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. And what's kind of fun about kink spaces is that you can be super, super specific. And so that's another thing that neurodivergent people usually like, is that I can tell you exactly what I want and what I don't want. And we can talk about exactly how long it's going to last. And then we can talk about what exactly happens after. So that's sort of what a scene is I have given you an understanding of the things that I'm interested in. I'll know when it's over, and then there'll be something that's like an aftercare. Like maybe you'll get me snacks, or we'll just hang out, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Tell me more about these snacks.
Yeah. Can someone getting me snacks just be my kink?
Yeah.
Can someone just get me snacks?
You know what you need? You need a service sub.
What?
A service sub?
A service sub?
Yeah. They're people that just like to serve. And so then in any variety of ways. And so I had a friend who like went on vacation and there was like a cabin where they had to keep like chopping wood and putting it into the fireplace for warmth. So they just like posted online that they were looking for a service sub, and somebody just like sat in the corner. And then when it was time to like bring them snacks or stoke the fire, then they just got up and took care of it.
Wait, and then somebody will just do that?
Yeah, that's the fun thing about kink.
That's their thing? They like to...
They want to be in service to others.
This is a whole new world. I mean, that's a lot of trust.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of trust that there's people not manipulating that to be like...
Or also letting a stranger into your home and giving them the axe and being like, have at it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of trust all the way around. Absolutely.
It's like, I need my bonsais watered daily.
I also just can't, I don't know. Like this whole, the semantics thing of it is just like, I just can't, my mind is like, wait, what, how is it different like that? But then people could volunteer. Or they could like help their neighborhood community. But if they do it, maybe because it's not specific enough, that's why it then turns into like a kink thing.
I bet they probably service their community.
I said serve their community. I think that you fell to the fetish side real fast.
I meant serve. I meant it in that way. I mean,
everybody has different needs or desires with that, but I know that there's a lot of people that have just like on FetLife contacted me and said, you know, that that they find me interesting and that they would love to just do yard work, even if I never said hi to them, just knowing that they were doing yard work for me.
This is beautiful.
Yeah, really my
spouse has not agreed to it. My spouse is like, I don't want randos coming over and working in my yard.
I mean,
is your spouse going to do the yard work then?
That's what I said.
I'm like, you know, like beggars can't be choosers, you know. That's just saving money right there.
But they can be livers. Like, I don't mean like black market liver. I mean like living livers. Yeah. They can just live. They can. Yeah. Yeah,
I don't know. This is fascinating. This is so fascinating to me.
Yeah, you thought you were going to bring me on to talk about nerd culture, which I totally can, but I also think that's part of nerd culture.
As I interrupt the semantics, this is so fascinating. I'm so curious about the differences and what makes something.
Well, I think it's just
a list of behaviors.
I think it's just the words that we've just. All those dictionary meanings are just things that have evolved over time anyway.
Yeah, everything's a social construct.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I remember the first time when I discovered the HBO Real Sex series and watching that and going like, people do this? People do that?
Oh,
what?
Oh no.
What? Like each episode was just mind-blowing.
Do they show you or could you just hear about it? Because like I'd prefer to just hear
it's more in a documentary kind of style. Like you don't see people having it's just HBO. Okay. It's not.
Well, I don't know. I haven't been on HBO in a long while and they have some stuff on there, you know?
Well, but they're not penetrating. It's acting. Huh? It's not
Jehovah's Witness. And so like my,
what? Oh, sorry. What did you say?
Wait, hold on.
I grew up Jehovah's Witness.
Uh-huh.
So my ability to understand anything related to sex or connection or sexuality was incredibly limited. And so this is just sort of like me after doing a bunch of therapy and trauma work to just be like, yeah, what are the rules? How do we get to these rules? What are the things? And there's so many times that I've just like really embraced being neurodivergent and just asking a million questions. And so I had a friend and he just had like he got a new girlfriend. I made a joke about us watching a movie together and snuggling. And he's like, oh no, I can't do that. And I was like, oh, you can't snuggle and watch a movie with me? Okay. Is there anything else you can't do? And he's like, yeah, no long hugs. And I was like, how many seconds is a long hug? And then he got irritated because he thought that I was like picking on him or something. But I literally just wanted to know. And that's sort of like me just asking those questions sort of moved me more and more into polyamory and kink of like, oh, like, what is it to give somebody a long hug? How many seconds is a long hug? Why do we have rules around this? What does it even mean? And so it's more been like my exploration.
It didn't occur to me that you could give a hug too long.
Right?
Really?
So confusing. Also, wow. How many seconds is too long?
I feel like, yeah, I definitely feel like you can, but I'm more like vibe it out. I think long of a hug, it's like different with every person.
Well, yeah, you're supposed to tap out.
Not always.
No, you like, no, that's the end of a hug is when one person goes tap, tap. That's it.
That works for some people.
I feel like that's to say
it depends. Huh? It depends on the person. Like, I feel like my hug with everybody is just a little bit different.
Mine too.
He gives like the best hugs, and I'm just like, you're, well, I think she's maybe has a boyfriend right now, but I'm just like, whoever your person is so lucky because she gives the best bear hugs. Like, you could just melt. But like, I have a few, like, but then other people, the hugs are just more like,
how do you know to end the hug?
Like, you feel like they hug you with their soul, and other people, it's just like almost like a handshake, and other people, it's almost like a high five. Like, I just find hugs to have such different vibes.
How do you know when a hug ends if there's no signal?
I mean, the same way that you know when a handshake ends.
Well, up and down and you're done.
Yeah, you know, sometimes. No,
hug, either it's a quick hug, you go in and both people go boom. That's also a tap. That's a quick tap. Or you hold in like 1-2 and somebody tap. It's always
like
a tap.
I feel like it's very.
I don't think you notice the tap.
Yes, I do notice the tap. I'm pretty sure when I give you a hug, we give each other a tap. It's like,
I haven't seen you in 7 years. So.
And that's the kind of hug we're going to. I know, you know what? I haven't seen you in so long. When I see you, I'm going to pick you up and twirl you. It's going to be
There is. Are you saying I've made up this tap thing?
No, the tap thing definitely happens. And with some of my friends, I do give the tap hug. Mostly men, but sometimes women, sometimes my sister, like, it just depends.
Well, I tap them out too.
It's not like they're tap people out.
It's not like they're saying enough, Silas, every time.
Oh, I do the Disney hug, which is like the Disney characters are not allowed to stop hugging the kid until the kid disengages.
What?
And so, yeah, the Disney hugs are so
the Disney hug is like, you know, if I'm a princess and a kid wants to hug me, then we stay hugging until the kid disengages from the hug. And so I usually do that. And then I'm just looking for like a subtle shift in like their body movement to tell me that they're done like physically engaging in a hug. But there are some times where I'm like, this is lasting a very long time, and I'm wondering if you are hoping for something that's not a hug.
Ooh, okay, yes. I think that's where that sense is of when it starts to feel awkward. Like, the hug needs to feel comfortable, and the moment that it starts to feel awkward, it's too long. And I think that
Well, that's depends. Not a hug. That's just holding.
I love the semantics
if
about
it's
this.
It's too long, it's no longer a hug. It's just
what
holding.
What is it?
It's holding.
It's a holding.
You're just holding them.
But sometimes you can comfortably hug hold somebody and it's still a hug. And other people, it could be like 1 second and it's just like too long. No, just.
I feel like a hug requires some exertion. Like, there needs to be a squeeze.
Yeah, and otherwise you're like a limp spaghetti hug, and those are those.
I don't like, hug them. And then I'll just ignore it. But like once you, if you're just like, if you stop the engagement and you're still, you're just holding them. Then you're wrestling. At that point, you're just wrestling upright.
When you were saying tap out, I was like, well, most of my hugs are upright, so I don't really do the tap, tap, tap thing. I love the idea
that your hugs move from hugging to wrestling. Like, talk
sometimes
about
it. Sometimes I hug them, and then it's a belly-to-belly suplex just right
and
there.
And before you know it, you're at the dive bar in
one,
Ballard.
Two, three.
You know, that's how you end up there.
It's true. Never invited back again. All right. So we got your, Marie. This is the first time you're on the show. And we're almost out of time. And so
fascinating. And I want you to write a book.
And I want you to write a book.
Oh my gosh.
And I've learned about your life so far. I'm like, oh, you're so interesting. I want to hear more.
So the first time someone's on the show, we ask them the world famous 7 questions. Okay. And so we're going to ask you these and just tell us as much as you want on it. Okay. So number one, what are you most nerdy about?
A genre
or anything, just it can be whatever.
I mean, I just really love, I really love science fiction and dystopian sort of stories, but if I have to pick one thing, it'd probably be Star Trek.
Okay.
It's dystopian stories. You must be loving 2025.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't hoping to like live through dystopia.
No.
Also, I keep thinking like I'm too old to like lead us through something that needs to be like a 16-year-old who doesn't have asthma and chronic health issues. Yeah. So I'll just be on the sidelines.
Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Apples, Honeycrisp apples,
mm-hmm.
apples. I have very specific like things that I like to eat, and I will say that that is always a crowd pleaser for me. I'm the crowd.
Listeners of you, they've heard their first two answers and they're like, no wonder Silas loves her. Okay. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Water and vodka.
Together?
I have a great color scheme.
Well, I like soda water with my vodka. And then I like to get it in a tall glass so that I feel like I'm hydrating. I'm like, it's mostly water. That's how I feel about coffee. I also love coffee. Mm. And I'm like, it's mostly water. That's hydrating, right?
Sure. Okay. All right. Number four, what kind of music do you love?
I really love like punk and alternative, but also if I can have a good ballad that I can just sing to, I get really excited.
Like what kind of ballad?
One of my karaoke go-tos is Give Me One Reason. I just really like a nice sort of like deep throaty song. I think it's like a vocal stem. I love to sing.
Who sings that?
Tracy Chapman.
Oh, that song. Oh, now it's in my head. Okay.
I know. I would sing it, but I don't have the rights. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can't afford that on here. thank you. Number five, what do you love to create?
I think that it goes to sort of all of the accumulation of things that I've done in my life. Like, I, you know, studied community psychology and film and like all of these other things. And I just want to create an environment or a situation that creates delight and healing. Mm-hmm. I want people to be in a space where they feel like they can be their authentic selves and not self-conscious. And so I think it's difficult because it varies, But that's my ideal. And then the way that that happens can be in different things. So sometimes it's my set. Sometimes it's me telling really nerdy jokes and then knowing that the people that respond to that are really feeling seen and understood, because there's healing within that space.
Love that. Number six, what's a game you love to play?
My favorite video game is The Legend of Zelda. I mean, I know that that's like a whole branch of things, but the new, like the Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom are so freaking lovely that, yeah, I could just like nerd out on talking about that and what I love about it.
You finished all of them?
Yeah. But it's so hard because I have hyper empathy. And so then I have like all of these things where it's like, hurry, you need to go save, you know, you need to go save this person. And then I run and do it, but then I don't stop to do the side quests. And then after I finish the game, I have to go back and do the side quest. But I get so anxious having people tell me that they're relying on me. But, like, I finish it too fast. And then, you know, like if there's like a little merchant that's like walking around and saying, will you please look at my fare? I was like, of course I'll look at it. I don't want to hurt your feelings while I'm there. I'm like, I guess I have to buy something. I don't want you to feel bad that like your stuff wasn't good enough. And I know that doesn't help me in gameplay.
Do you get stressed out if you are watching a show or TV series or movie and somebody's about to make a bad choice? Does that stress you out?
Oh yeah.
I get super stressed out by that too. So like when you were saying this, I'm like, oh, I bet you also do. It's so hard. Yeah. Sometimes I'll talk to the TV, you know, you're like, don't do that. You gotta stop. That's where I get my black card back, Silas. You're talking to the screens. Huh?
There's some things that I just can't watch. Like people are like, Breaking Bad is amazing. And I'm like, ooh.
I was able to watch it. I talked to Silas about this like a bunch on the podcast too. Well, I feel like it's come up several times of what I can't watch anymore. Like after having my daughter, I can't watch a bunch of stuff I used to be able to watch. Like I watched Breaking Bad, like Sons of Anarchy. I watched Game of Thrones a couple times through. I watched like, you know, like all this stuff. I don't think I can touch that for another like 30 years, even go close to it.
Parental anxiety is really hard to manage.
All right, last question.
Yes.
Number seven. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Oh. This one like cuts to the quick, dude. I mean, I think that there's a number of things, which is first, I just want to know that I was a positive influence on something. I want to feel like I made the world a better place in some capacity. And then I have, and I know that this is part of just my neurodivergent anxiety. I have such a perseverance of like, that I'm secretly doing harm. And so I want them to be like, oh, she wasn't a terrible white person. Like that would be such a compliment for me. Like, I don't want somebody to be like, oh, she was okay for her time. I want them to be like, oh, she was actually an okay person.
That's nice. You are more than an okay person, Marie.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today, taking your time out middle of the day.
I really appreciate it. So lovely to talk to you. And I didn't even tell you all the things that I love about Star Trek. So another time, maybe.
Oh, absolutely. We will be talking about that soon in another capacity. Samantha, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, just, I mean, lovely to meet you. Such an interesting conversation. And if you write a book, let me know. I will definitely want to read it.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Black and a half.